Okay, there's the bell. Time to get started. A good crowd here tonight. Several visitors, and we're glad to see you. I should be back with us when you can. We're beginning our 3-year narrative through the Bible, through the narrative story of the book of Genesis. And we're chapters, by the end of 33, we get 34, 35, 36, and 38 tonight. We skip 37. For Sunday, you'll be reading 37. I think it's 37 and 39. So, hope you're doing the reading and getting some of the details. We're not actually covering it in class. If you'll read this thing through, like I said, it's the first quarter a couple of times. Between the classes, you'll get a good picture of what's going on here. So, let's kind of get, how we do every time, a little run start. Go back and pick up our slides from last time and kind of see where we are. So, we'll back up a little bit and get things turned on here. There we go. All right. Last class we talked about Jacob getting ready to leave Padan Aram, where he'd been up there with Laban and gone to get his wife. And two wives and two concubines and about 12 children, 11 sons and a daughter while he's up there, and all kind of flocks and things. So, after this 7 years for, he talked with Rachel, that's got Leah, 7 more years for Rachel. In 6 years, he worked for the livestock. Now, Laban's sons, realizing that he's taken a lot away from them and their inheritance, so they're getting ill toward him. Laban's attitude has kind of changed toward him. And so, God appears to him and tells him to go back home. Go back to the land that he had promised him. He'd already had the promises made to him, which is that Bethel coming up here. And so he tells him to go. So Jacob calls his wives, Leah and Rachel, out to him and talked to them about going and told them what God had told him to do. And they said, we're ready to go. We have nothing here left for us. All the inheritance is here. The gift is here. So they were willing to go with him. So he leaves. Laban, in the meantime, is 3 days away shearing his sheep and taking care of his sheep. But he finally hears about it 3 days later. He takes off to catch up, takes him 7 days to catch up with him. And you might think what his attitude is going to be when he gets there, having left and taken all the flocks and grandchildren and daughters away from him. So God appears to him and said, don't you say anything, good or bad, to Jacob when you catch up with him. So he does catch up with him, and then he basically says, why did you leave without telling me goodbye? Why did you not take my children, my grandchildren, and leave without saying anything? Of course, Jacob says he was afraid of what Laban would say to him, what he would do. And then the issue comes up about the household idol. Jacob doesn't know that Rachel has stolen it. So he says, search. You find it. Person, ought to die. And so he does. And to me, it's kind of weird him going through and searching the tents of his own children, his own daughters, trying to find this idol. But he does. And doesn't find them. Rachel's sitting on them. We know that in her camel saddle. And so Laban has some issues with him and Jacob about conversation about that. But they decide then to make a treaty, make a covenant that they wouldn't harm each other in the future. So they do that. They set a monument up there of stones and they eat a meal together. And then Laban returns and goes back home. And Jacob then and his company are ready to go on the way. But we talked about that's only half his battle. He's got that one taken care of now. So when he left, of course, Esau, 20 years before, Esau was going to kill him. So now he's got to go back and face Esau. So he sends a messenger ahead to Esau, kind of see what's going on with him. And he comes back and said, yeah, Esau's coming to meet you, all right. He's got 400 men with him, which would be a pretty scary thing. So Jacob starts preparing for that. He divides his company into two groups. So if he gets one, that maybe the other one survive over here. Praise to God for deliverance, which is a little change we've seen now. But Jacob has made as he gets closer to God after his experience with Bethel and things. Then he starts sending presents to Esau. We read the actual text last time. You remember all the different animals he put in those droves as they're going out there. And each time you bow down to Esau, and here's gifts that's coming from your servant Jacob. Then, of course, Jacob has the session with the angel, the man he wrestled with all night. They told him his name would be changed to Israel. Then they crossed the Jabbok River, and those on, and he meets Esau then. Separates his children into groups like he did the groves of animals up there. Puts the two handmaidens and their children first, and Leah and her children, and then Rachel and her children, her child. It was this time just one, Joseph. And goes to meet him. We said, based on the age calculation, Joseph's about 6 years old now. So kind of get an idea. We're going to get into him pretty soon. By the time when he's about 17 years old, next lesson, I think. So Esau gets the gift then when he finally meets Jacob, and Jacob bows down to him 7 times as he approaches him. And Esau's question is, what's the meaning of all these gifts? And Jacob basically tells him, you know, they're for you. I'm giving them to you. We talked about the fact that the custom there was that you send a gift and it has to be accepted to let you know that the friendship is being given back the other direction over here. If it's refused, then friendship's being refused. So, you get the use of the term enough. We talked about that some. Jacob said, Esau said, I don't need them, I have enough. Meaning he has enough possessions because he had his own flock and things. But then when Jacob uses that, he uses a different form of the word enough there. And we'll get that on the next slide here. So they make peace. There's no trouble between them. And they separate. Esau wants to lose some people to help him there. He says, no, I'm fine. Esau goes back his separate way, goes back home. Jacob goes on to Succoth and then on down to Shechem. And here's the terms enough we talked about. Jacob says, I have enough. I have plenty. I have all these possessions, physical possessions that I have. I don't really need the flocks you're giving me. But he did take them. And Jacob, he said, I have enough. I have everything. But he had a relationship with God. He had peace with Esau. He had what he needed there. So he talked about each one, what he had and what he didn't have. And of course, repentance, we can talk about that quite a bit. And the lesson from us there is that we choose our character. We choose how we're going to be, how we're going to act. We choose the attitude we're going to have. We choose our relationship with God. We can change. We choose how much to change. And those are the choices that we have to make. I had this slide in the series Sunday, but I didn't ever put it up here. I got to pick one extra time. Of course, it's Teddy Roosevelt. It's not an inspired writer, but it certainly has got the point. Knowing what's right didn't mean much unless you do what's right. I mean, what you do that counts. And so that's certainly a biblical concept, even though it may not be an inspired writer. So that kind of catches up what we're doing from last class. Here's a map we looked at last time. Brother Amram had been up here. He came down. The land of Gilead here. There's the Jabbok River coming into the Jordan River over here. The meeting would have occurred in here somewhere, and then on the Succoth, and then up through this valley here, on up to the high country to Shechem, and we'll get down to Bethel tonight, and talk about that. So I think I got maybe one more map. Yeah, a little closer. So again, up through the Shechem, so we start off tonight, and we'll get down to Bethel, and then a little further down past that here in a few minutes. So, Jacob's back in Canaan now, and we're right at the end of chapter 33. It's a little bit there, then we jump to 34. And buy some land, which is the first land they've had there in Canaan, except what they had, the burial land that Abraham had bought. Builds an altar, and there's a name to get used to. We've already had one name, Haran. That's the name of a son, Abraham's brother, and also a city. Now we've got another one. So Shechem is the city they're in, but Shechem is also the son of Hamor, who's the prince of that area there. So we get Shechem the city and Shechem the son here. So we're talking mostly about Shechem the son as we proceed through here, but don't get the two mixed up. One's the city and one's the son there. So, but now we get to see the story of Dinah. Dinah was the daughter of Leah, the only girl we know of in the family. This point. If a few of different commentators put her age slightly different, generally in this 14 to 16 range, I saw it on 15 to 17, so that's the general area where they think she would have been age-wise at this time. It's been, 13 years since Jacob married Leah. They've worked 7 years, and there's 7 more and 6 more in there. we started coming back, so 13 years in there. That's fine. But anyhow, 14 or 16 years old maybe at this time. And she goes out to see the country, to see the people, to mix with the people and find out more about them and visit with them or whatever. So not only does she get out and see the country, she got out and she is seen. So somebody sees her, and when it sees her, is Shechem and more son. And he forces himself upon her, he rapes her, he entices her. Don't really know, the New International uses the word rape, he raped her. Others use different terminologies in talking about this. So exactly what he did, exactly how he did this, did he entice her into it? It's a surprise. The terms that are used is he defiled her, he humbled her. The bottom line, it was wrong, okay, whichever it was. Okay. So Shechem goes out and does this. Now, the reaction to it, though, is that he's strongly attached. He loved her, and he wants to get her for a wife. You look at most of the customs times here, when Jacob and Esau parted company, when they had their disagreement over the blessing. Remember how old they were at that time? 77. So he goes back then and works for Laban for 7 years. That makes 84. He was 84 when he married Leah and Rachel. So from everything I can tell, it's not uncommon for a much older man, I don't mean ancient, but older there, to marry a much younger woman. So for him to want to marry her and her 16 years old, not been uncommon for that time. From everything I can read and see about it. So he's strongly attached to her, so he goes in and tells his daddy, get her for me for a wife. And if you actually read through the text there, he says, I don't care what the bounty is, or what the dowry is, what it's going to cost, what I should give for, in exchange for her. Whatever it is, I'll pay it. He's that strongly attached to her. He wanted her for a wife. Now, she's there. Jacob's still there. But the brothers are all out away with their flocks. So they don't know about what's happened. Jacob says, best thing he can do is just kind of keep his peace for right now. So he can't go up and fight against Shechem or anything like that. No help there. So they're away. Jacob holds his peace. But the brothers get word of it. And they come back. And they are very, very upset, as you might expect them to be. So now what's going to happen? Well, they don't just jump up and go up there. They're upset. Well, they say such a thing should not be done. And then they're right. It should not be done. We'll talk about that a little more toward the end of the class here. So Hamor comes and talks to Jacob about getting the arrangements made for the wife. Your daughter, my son. And he says, keep it now, these are Jacob and his family, the people of God versus the people of the land. And we know later on with all this thing about not intermarrying, but even now, Hamor comes out and make marriages with us. And he offers big dowry and gifts to get her. Now the brothers see a chance here to take care of the situation. They come back and said, okay, we'll do that. We will interchange daughters with you. Your sons marry our daughters, our sons marry your daughters. But, and keep in mind this was deceitfully done, but what they said was, you must become like us. You must be circumcised. So all the males, not just Shechem and Hamor, but all the males of your city must be. We're going to start exchanging wives and you must become like us. So they told him that. Now, Hamor now and Shechem have got to go back to their people and sell this idea. They go back and they meet in the gate of the city and they start telling them, let's do this thing. Let's get set up where we can mix and mingle with them. He says, they're peaceful people. We'll marry their daughters. Their flocks will become our flocks. If we get involved with them and we'll get part of what they have and we'll share with them, and we'll be like one people. So the men of the city agreed to it. All agreed to be circumcised. So they could be like this and make this arrangement up here where they could be intermarrying with them. Third day, when they were in extreme pain, I think one text I read put it, they're sore, Simeon and Levi. Now, think about whose sons they are. Dinah is the daughter of who? Which one of the wives? Leah. All right. Who had the four sons first? Leah. Remember, she wasn't loved. Maybe he'll love me at this. But who are the first four sons? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And we're going to talk about all four of those tonight. Okay. But Simeon and Levi, which would be two of Dinah's brothers, went and took care of things. They go attack the city. Now, by themselves, with others, I don't know. They're the ones mentioned. They go attack the city. They kill the men in the city. They kill Hamor and Shechem. And they plunder the city. They take Dinah out of his house. Now think about that. She was already there with him. Plunder the city, take the herds, take all the wealth, take the women and children captive. So they essentially wipe out any remembrance of the city of Shechem. So that was a little deceitful trick to get them where they could go in and overpower them because of this circumcision thing. So that's how they go back getting revenge on the people of Shechem and getting their daughter, or their sister in this case, back. Now, Jacob has a reaction to that. That you caused us trouble. What's going to happen when the word just gets out to other people around? I mean, Canaan's not a great big land. The word's going to travel. Something like this would happen. So Jacob becomes very concerned about it, trouble, because they've gone out and taken this revenge on the city of Shechem. And a couple of comments about it. All right, that's the end of chapter, 34, I guess. So this is all happens up here in the city of Shechem up here. Now they're going down to Bethel. Luz is the original name. Bethel or Bethel, pronounced with the emphasis on the E-L for God, Bethel. Now, also hold on this map. Jerusalem's down here. So keep in mind, here's the top of the Dead Sea. Here's Jerusalem. We're going to talk about, or mention Ephrath, possibly Bethlehem. Now, the Bethlehem we know is on down below Jerusalem, off this map, just a little bit. But don't get this Bethlehem up here confused with the Bethlehem for the birth of Jesus that we're used to seeing. Here's Ai, Jericho. You're close in mind. Here's Bethel. We're headed there now, which is where Jacob had the vision of the ladder on the way up to, like it was 20 years ago. So, God tells him to move to Bethel, go down there. And Jacob tells his house to do a few things. Put away all your foreign gods. Purify yourself. And this one little strange thing here. Change your clothes. Think about that just a minute. Change your clothes. They're going down to this place where Jacob had met who? God. Okay. And God's putting it back there. He says, you go there and build this altar and worship me. Just change your clothes. I've been reading a book. It's called Be Strong, Putting God's Power to Work in Your Life. It's a story about the book of Joshua, it amounts to. But just a few nights, I was reading that a few nights before I started reviewing this class, and just read across this same phrase. Change your clothes. They didn't bathe and change clothes, everybody like we do. Think about the amount of water to be drawn to take a bath, to wash clothes, in addition to what you had to do to water all your animals and the other things you had to do. So it wasn't like just trying to stick it. Change your clothes became a sign of cleansing, a sign of freshness. So, here's what this book has to say about it, and from the book of Joshua. If the experience of Israel at Mount Sinai was the pattern, Exodus 19, sanctify yourselves, and that everybody bathe and change their clothes, and the married couples devoted themselves wholly to the Lord. That's about 1 Corinthians 7. In the Near East, however, water was a luxury, and wasn't used too often for personal hygiene. In our modern world, we're accustomed to comfortable bathing facilities. But these were unknown to most people in the Bible times. In the Bible, the imagery of washing one's body and changing clothes symbolized making a new beginning with the Lord. Since sin is pictured as defilement, Psalms 51, God had to cleanse us before we could truly follow Him. Now here's the reference to what we're looking at tonight. And Jacob made a new beginning with the Lord and a return to Bethel. He and his family washed themselves and changed their garments. Genesis 35. After King David confessed his sin, he bathed, changed his clothes, and worshiped the Lord. 2 Samuel 12. And that image is also carried across to the New Testament. So, it's interesting that this phrase came up in this lesson as I just got through reading this thing from Joshua about the significance of wash yourself and change your clothes. We're going to the place where God was, where Jacob had met God. It was a significant place for him. So, get rid of the foreign gods, to purify themselves, they want to meet God. So he goes to Bethel, and he builds an altar there again. So that's where he went to worship God. God has sent him back to that same place he had sent him before. This is the point where Deborah, who was Rebecca's nurse, had died at that point. So, we've already had the incident where Jacob was wrestling with a man before he crossed the Jabbok, and then his name was changed to Israel. We get again here. God speaks to Jacob and says, your name will no longer be Jacob, it's going to be Israel. And he uses this phrase here, I am God Almighty. Where have you heard that recently? Somebody, surely. I'm going to tell Steve on you if you don't say it. Last Sunday night's sermon, right? Talks about this very phrase here. Again, a little coincidence that we had that the same time we had it in our class here. But he tells him, I am God Almighty. Speaking of who he was, what he had done, the power he had, and all that he should have for him there. He tells him the promises again. I'll make a great nation out of you. I'll give you this land. And they're in Bethel at this time. That's where they are, back to the mountain again. So that's the cleansing, the refreshing, the meeting God, the promises made again to Jacob. So now we're going down this way, getting down through here, and this is, there's Rachel too, maybe here. Rachel's going to die here just in the next little section here. So Rachel is in hard labor, about to have her second son, Benjamin. He's born as, she names him, not Benjamin, but Ben-Ami, as she is dying. She dies. Jacob names him Benjamin, and she dies during the childbirth here. And they bury, which we saw the slide just now, on the way to Ephah. Ephah is also called Bethlehem at other times in this Old Testament section, not the Bethlehem in the New Testament that we talked about. And now we're going to get Reuben, the first of the four sons. We had Simeon and Levi, what they did already. Now we get Reuben up here. He goes in and lays with Bilhah, which being his father's concubine. So Jacob hears of it. Not said he did anything about it, but he heard of it and knew about it. So here's Reuben's defilement here with Bilhah. So now we go back and look at the list again. Remember the 4, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2 I talked about. So Leah was the one that, Rachel's the favorite wife. Leah's the one that's not loved. She has the first four children, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. And then Rachel gives her handmaid, Bilhah, to Jacob to raise up children for her, it's Dan and Naphtali. Leah sees what's done, so she gives Zilpah to him, Dan, Gad, and Asher. Leah comes back now with two more sons, Issachar and Zebulun, and his daughter Dinah. And then Rachel has Joseph while they're up in the east, and now come back here and has Benjamin as she dies in Canaan. So that's got the 12 sons born now. So at the end of this chapter, Isaac dies. Isaac now is 180 years old. And the interesting thing here is Jacob and Esau come together to bury him. So they're, again, a sign that they're real, their differences, the threat that they put behind them with this thing. Think back when Abraham died. Who came together to bury him? Remember that? Isaac and Ishmael came together. Two sons there. in a similar fashion. The next chapter, 36, is about Esau. You read through it, you get a better idea. Just lots of names and names and names and names and names. Some of the big points out there, I guess, Esau, we already know, took the wives from the Canaanites. He takes all his possessions and he moves out of Canaan. And he, for the same reason that we had before when Abraham and Lot separated. There's a land without support, his flocks and Esau's, you know, Jacob's flocks. So not enough land support. So he moves down to the area of Mount Seir. And we also talked about earlier, Esau is also known as Edom. He becomes the father of the Edomites. And here's where they wind up. Way down here. So here's the top of the Dead Sea again. Here's Jerusalem. Here's Bethel way up here. But he goes down. This is the area of Mount Seir. It's where the Edomites will be when the children of Israel later come back up through here. They go conquer the land. So way down to the bottom of the Dead Sea, or Esau and the Edomite nation. So now we jump across 37 because that's the story of Joseph. We'll come back and pick that one up. Next class, 37 and 39. And we look at chapter 38 here. And Judah. Got Reuben, already talked about him. Simeon, Levi, and now we get Judah. Well, he's done. Judah marries Hira, this Adullamite woman, and they have three sons. Er, pronounced now, Onan, and Shelah. And each one of them, should have had Tamar for a wife because of the death of the sons there, the death of the husband. So Er marries her, and he is wicked. I don't know what is wicked about him, but he's wicked, and God kills him. God takes his life. You don't know how, but he did. So then it was Onan's responsibility to go into her and to raise up children for his brother's name. Well, Onan refuses to do that. He doesn't take his responsibility and do what he's supposed to do. So God kills him too. Now it happened that Shelah is young at this point. I don't know how young, but too young to marry her. So Judah tells Tamar, go back to your father's house. And when Shelah is old enough, when he's grown up, then you can have him as a husband, and he will raise up children to your husband. So she's waiting for him to grow up. Now, meantime, Judah's wife dies. He gets over his period of grieving, period of mourning for her, and he decides to go out and check on his shepherds, the sheep herders that are looking after his sheep. So he has one of the men there, Lulamite, go with him, his friend of his, Hiram. Tamar hears about the trip. Here's where they're going. Now, she's at her father's house with her widow's garments on, and so hears about the trip. So she goes up and gets ahead of him. That's the path he'll be going, gets ahead of him, and she dresses herself like a prostitute and sits on the side of the road, as a prostitute would, to attract men into her. Keep in mind now, this is the key point here, that she has not been given to Shelah as was promised to her. Judah has not done that. So she dresses the harlot, sits near the path that Judah would go by. So Judah passes by, sees her there, sees her as a harlot, as a prostitute, and stops and goes in with her. She wants a payment, as would be expected. He promises to send her young goat out of his flock. Well, she says, how I know what you're going to do that? What's the promise you're going to do that? So she asks for this pledge. He gives her some significant things that will be identified to him. His signet or his staff. The things that he would know and would recognize. To hold on to as until the payment for the goat comes back. So then Tamar returns and goes back to her father's house. Judah goes on his way into the incident, as far as he's concerned, except he's got to send that goat back to her, get his stuff back. So he sends the goat back by his friend, Hiram, and Tamar. He asks, where's the He went, where's the prostitute that sit out in the way out here? No prostitute around here. They didn't know anything about it. So he couldn't find her. So he comes back and tells Judah, he says, no big deal, don't worry about it. She's got my stuff. There he goes. 3 months later, word comes that to Judah that Tamar has played the harlot and is pregnant. Judah's reaction is, take her out and burn her. Bring her out, let her be burned. So as they bring her out, she says, does anybody recognize this? Who does this belong to? This is the man who I'm pregnant by. So then Judah sees it, and his comment is, she is more righteous than I. What had he not done? He had not given Sheila, or his son, to her, as he promised, as a husband to bring up children for her, husband. He fell on the promise to her. That is why he made this comment that she is more righteous than I. Now, interesting thing here, twins are born. Read through it, one sticks his hand out, ties a red ribbon about it, comes back, the other one's born, Perez and Zerah here. And here's the part that I find interesting about it. Look at Matthew chapter 1, the genealogies of Christ. Right? Genealogies of Jesus Christ, the son of David. He was a son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob. Well, everybody's good there so far. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Now, if you look at the genealogies, which one of the sons of Jacob is going to come through? Well, that's going to come through Judah. We'll get another verse later on in chapter 49. It talks about that. But it comes through Judah. So Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Who's next in the line up here? Perez. This son that's born to Tamar. From this session that he has with her when she was playing the prostitute. So that's the genealogy of Christ through that very line there. Which to us would seem a little unusual. Okay. Comments from somebody? I've talked all the way through. I hate to do that, but I did. So when we started, I didn't stop. Anybody got anything? Any talk? Points? In the way? Comments? Whatever. That's not, go ahead, sorry. Even though they're God's chosen people, their weakness is there, they're human, we're going to hope we're going to get, hang on that point. One more point about that just in a minute. Let's look at this thing right here right quick. Think about the responsibility here. When Dinah went out to see the lamb, 14 to 16 years old, parents' responsibility. I think about this now as you think about your children and how you might be raising them, those of you. Where is she? She's the wrong place. What did she want to do? She wanted to go out and see the daughters of the land. See what was going on. So to me, it's a little lesson here to think about, even with that, that if she had not been out there visiting the daughters of the land, perhaps and she wouldn't have been in the wrong place. This wouldn't happen to her. So, when you get out there and mix with the other girls. Another point here, another thing. When they took vengeance on, revenge is a better word, revenge on the city of Shechem, Jacob comes back and says, what have you done? You're going to cause us all kind of trouble. And be it applied to this point here or not, but all about this verse here from Romans 12. Think about us and our dealings with other people and what they do to us and things like that. Says, don't avenge yourself. You know, if that makes you mad, let it go. Get out of the way. Let it go. God said, I'll take care of it. So a little thought for us from that. Jacob was upset because of the revenge they had taken on shepherd. But the lesson for us from Romans 12 here is, get mad, you want to take revenge, you want to take vengeance out on somebody, let it go. God'll take care of it. And then back to kind of the point that Scott's making over here. Going back to the situation here with Tamar and Judah. Did Judah plan to do this? He's walking along the road, sees her there, and says, I'll give you a goat, and goes in with her. I wonder how many of our temptations, how many of times we yield to temptation. It's not so much the repetitive, habitual, over and over type thing, but it's those momentary gotchas. I like that. I mean, we're tempted, and before we know, we've done something we wish we hadn't done. We could be losing the temple. We whatever. Like Scott said, these are people like we are. Jacob was walking by there. His wife has died. He sees this lady there. He decides to go in with her. Now, if you've done it any other day, I don't know. But it's certainly not a planned event, not something he arranged. It was just the opportunity there, and he fell for it. I think, to me, that's the biggest problem we have when it comes to temptation and sin. It's that momentary thing that we scream out, we lose our temper, we react some way, whatever it may be that we do. It's just a reactionary thing for the moment. Does that make sense to anybody? Maybe somebody's got a comment somewhere at kitchen here. I doubt there's many of us that are just wrapped up in the same sin over and over and over. It's those reactionary things. Those moments, spur moment things. You have to watch them try to control. No, I mean, no, to Judah again. It's just that one time. But now we've seen what Reuben did. What did he do? Went into Bilhah. He may have seen that and lusted for it and planned it. I don't know, but he did that. Simeon and Levi reacted to the situation with Dinah. He took advantage of that. Now here's what Judas done with Tamar. All four of these first four sons here. Oh yeah. And then like Scott says, we're not to the end of the problems yet. Okay. Go in the next chapter here and get some more of these same guys here. This is And taking that a step further, as you said, talking about it. When Abraham was going to offer Isaac, kill him, and end that promised line, he didn't have the faith to waver. If that was true, and it's just entirely possible, this whole thing they had done then caused his faith to waver, and that he could be wiped out. And I don't know, it's just a thought that comes to mind from that. Okay, 37 and 39, I think it is for Sunday. We can just start in the story of Joseph now. We're going to start winding down these others to get Joseph.